Welcome to New Realities. This program is about the evolution of our mind, body, spirit. And I'm very happy to have tonight Senator Mike Gravel, a former senator from Alaska, two-term senator, also a presidential candidate in 2008. But interviewing him tonight in context of a panel he was part of, which was the citizens' hearings for UFO disclosure. He was the only senator, former senator, to sit on that panel, along with five other former congressional representatives. And I feel brave act to be part of that. And we'll talk about what your opinion of UFOs are. And Senator Gravel will also be a keynote speaker at the upcoming Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree of May 19th to 21st, 2017. So that's a very exciting addition. Welcome, Senator, to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Let's go back to the citizen hearings. This was a five-day event at the National Press Club put on by Stephen Bassett with 40 witness experts in the field, that have, including pilots and scientists and experiencers who've testified to the reality of UFOs. Before coming into that hearing, were you open or what was your feeling in general about the subject?
Well, that's how I would characterize it. I was open to the thought. I held the view very personally that it would be the height of human arrogance to not realize that there are other sentient human beings in the cosmos. And so I was open to it. But I was absolutely impressed with the hearing. We had a body of people who had direct experience from around the world with respect to the information about ET technology, ET events, and witness the unfortunate corruption of the American government trying to suppress this knowledge so that people would not be aware of what has transpired and what's going on. And so this hearing that we had over 4 days was awesomely informative and certainly confirmed my views that were open before I even went to this hearing.
I was sitting there for 5 days. It seemed like somewhere, it wasn't just you, it seemed like everyone on the panel at some point said, or felt like, oh my God, this is really happening. Was that the sense you had, that like
very much so. You couldn't help from day to day listening to the testimony from credible scientific, military, diplomatic witnesses from various countries, from the United States, giving testimony to what they physically, actually experienced. And then to realize how this whole experience and effort was covered up or attempted to be covered up by the U.S. government.
Mm. Well, that's what I want to talk to you about. And, of course, we'll also talk about what you'll be saying at Contact. But you were part of the government. You were a senator. That's like, you can't get any more part of the government, I suppose.
You can't.
When you
get
say
any
covered up by the president. Government.
You're right. A senator should be in a position to know what's going on, and unless you focus on this as part of your Senate agenda, it slips on by you, and that's essentially what goes on. Is that members of the Congress do not focus on this agenda. They've got so many other problems facing them, and so this issue goes on by, and the secrecy cult that exists within the government is able to effectively deny information in a normal course of events about the subject.
Well, you know, one of the last things you said at that hearing, and I think I remember it correctly, you said there's not as many conspiracies as you think, but there's more than you know. What did you mean by that?
Well, there are a lot of conspiracies in government, and I've witnessed the number of them. But then the people independently...
like what?
Not as thoroughly as informed, but intuitively know that there's conspiracies going on. They know essentially they're getting screwed one way or the other. And so though they can't prove it, they intuit that it's going on. And so that's what I meant, that there are more conspiracies than people are aware of, and yet people are aware of through their own suspicions of the conspiracies that exist far beyond what they think.
But then getting back to the UFO question, who, you know, because you're inside the government, you were there, would be keeping this a secret? Are there secret agencies that that don't deal with elected officials? How could that be possible?
Well, it's easy. If the elected official is not aware of something going on, then that elected official is not inquiring as to what's going on. So the first thing you have to do is become aware. And that's essentially what Steve Bassett was doing, was trying to make the Congress aware of what has gone on so that they would be more inquisitive and more demanding of answers in the future. That's a tall order to bring about, but that's what his program has been all about, is to take it to Congress, find out what they know, what they don't know, and try to gin up interest in their making requests for information.
Well, you know, Barry, right, you know, Senator, I guess he was a senator, Barry Goldwater, I guess, in the 60s and 70s was hot on the trail, too, and he was just shut down about the UFO investigation. I mean, I didn't like his politics, but I thought it was, you know, heroic to go for those secrets. Do you know anything about the Goldwater investigations?
Not thoroughly, but I do know this, that he did back down, and I think that's terrible. You know, he had this reputation of being a tough guy and what have you. You don't back down. Here, I had the same situation with the Pentagon Papers. I chose not to back down, and the issue went all the way to the Supreme Court. And what the Supreme Court ruled was that any member of Congress can release any amount of information on any subject and not be questioned about it. That's the speech debate clause of the Constitution. And so Barry Goldwater, you know, made a big show of having an interest and then felt that he was shut down. Well, who the hell can shut Barry Goldwater down? He's a United States senator. And like I say, I had exactly the same experience.
Well, I'm glad you went.
You're breaking up a little bit. You're breaking up a little bit on me.
UFO situation. Was there anything that you did? I know you were no longer an active member during the citizens' hearings, but was there something you did? Did you tell people that you can be done now about these?
You're breaking up. I don't hear the full question, unfortunately.
Be done now about. Um, 20, 30, 40 years later.
Well, what could be done now is that if you have a person who's a sitting senator who does want to get involved in the subject, and of course that's what Steve Bassett was trying to do and is trying to do, is to educate enough members of Congress that they will demand inquiries. But there's nothing more that I could do other than to relate past experience in this regard. But the key is that any member of Congress, based upon a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court, any member of Congress can make any inquiries and can share the results of those inquiries with the public without being questioned.
Right. But right. So if you were a member of of the Senate still, would you do something like that? Would that, it would of course be a risk to anyone's reputation, but would it be something you would feel strongly about doing?
I certainly would, but at the time, I had no knowledge in this area. But I did have knowledge of the Pentagon Papers, and I used my office to release it officially, and of course to suffer the consequences of being prosecuted by the Nixon White House. But I won that situation. The Supreme Court ruled that I could do this without being questioned.
But yeah, and thank you. But I'm just curious, if this is a secret, and obviously it is based on the witness testimony and thousands of pages that have been released through the Freedom of Information Act, who do you feel in secrets? Who would you guess?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. You broke up.
Who are keeping these secrets in the government? What branch of the government, and what would your guess be? Who's behind keeping these secrets?
I would say deep government, the intelligence communities, the military. These are people that just thrive on secrecy, whether it's warranted or not, and so. Since they may feel that this is important to keep from the American people, they can exercise their secrecy powers in that regard. Now, keep in mind, when I was 24 years old, I was a top secret control officer and adjutant for the Communications Intelligence Service. So if I could had that kind of power when I was 24, can you imagine what these people in higher echelons of government, the power they have to move the government in various directions away from what you and I would consider true democratic values.
What was exactly your job at 24? What did you do as far as that?
I was an adjutant at the Communications Intelligence Service. Okay, I was 24 years old. I was a second lieutenant. And I enlisted in the service. That was during the Korean War, and I was blessed to be sent to Europe because of my language capability, and also because I had already received an MOS in the intelligence field. And so they made me an adjutant. And what this Communications Intelligence Service did then what we do now wholesale, and that is to open people's mail and to wiretap them.
Uh-huh. Because you were checking for spies, is that it?
Yeah, well, in my case, I was just an administrative officer. But the whole project was to try and find out who was loyal or disloyal to the American cause, and keep in mind, this was at the height of the Cold War.
Right. It seems like it's gotten much worse since then with the NSA surveillance and just the whole, you know, the whole idea of spying on the Americans, like the whole Snowden thing that went down. It's gotten much worse since like your time, I would say, hasn't it?
No question about that. And Snowden is a veritable hero. So is WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, and also Chelsea Manning. These are people that put their life on the line for being able to communicate truth to the public, not only the American public, but the global public. And keep in mind, democracy can only survive if the people are informed, and as a result of being informed, give guidance to the policy that the government should take. But if you do not inform the people, then they're kept in the dark, then of course these nefarious would-be leaders can just go out and do what they want, and nobody's going to be the wiser. That, of course, is exactly what happened to the entire UFO issue, that people within the government made the decision that this This is not something, oh, I think the argument was, well, this would panic the public. They're ridiculous. The public is a lot more mature than that and could handle the truth. But that's what they live on, is the grist for their mill is the cult of secrecy, and that demands that the public in a supposed democracy is kept in the dark about what's going on.
Well, I appreciate you. I'm happy you like the release of Snowden. I mean, Snowden's coming forward and WikiLeaks. I think it is an important part. I think, of course, journalism in general is here to tell the truth that politicians are hiding or and don't want.
Well, that's a conclusion too far. Wait a second. That's a conclusion too far. I fault American media, which is controlled by the military-industrial complex and controlled by Wall Street, by totally distorting the information that exists in the world today, whether it's about China, whether it's about Iran, whether it's about Saudi Arabia. The American media distorts the entire issue, and so the American people are unfortunately misinformed about the motives of these countries and our motives.
So who do you trust? Who do we listen to? Of course, we can't listen to the mainstream. All right.
Who do we trust? You've got to trust yourself. You got to turn around and dig for information, and to begin to comprehend it, and to take the various sources. Here, let's look at the Washington Post right now, which is a newspaper of some renown, of courage in the past. But right now, they're the ones that wanted to go to war with Russia. And Russia has caused no reason for us to go to war with them. We cite the issue with respect to the Ukraine. But who started the issue in the Ukraine? This was the United States that spent $5 billion, admitted by the Undersecretary at State, and she admitted that we had spent this money to destabilize and bring about a coup in Ukraine, which of course triggered a reaction from Russia with the taking back, which they had before, back for 500 years, taking back the Crimea, because the Crimea housed the most important military base in the Russian government. That's Sevastopol. And so I think that the United States, which put in place a few Nazi characters in the Ukraine to try and gin up a conflict with Russia, and that, of course, we've done the same thing with Iran. We're the ones that started this. And we've done the same thing with Syria. It's our intelligence community that ginned up the war that we have in Syria to try and replace Bashar Assad, who was the head of the government. I mean, you look around the world today. There's a recent piece out by Noam Chomsky about all this rhubarb with the American media over Russia, and it's a joke. It's a joke, and it's a discredit to the American media that they're trying to make something. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm just saying. What's the joke? Tell me. No, keep going. Yeah.
The joke is what Noam Chomsky just said, that we're the laughingstock of the world. Here we're accusing of Russia manipulating the United States election, when in point of fact, we ourselves are the first to have used cyber security activity in bringing about the disruption in Iran of their nuclear activity, which was peaceful. They weren't after the bomb, but we were able to turn around and use our hacking ability along with Israel to do damage in Iran. Now, we're the first to start this. And so what Chomsky is saying is that what a joke this is. We are the biggest hackers in the world. Do you think anybody's going to hack us without realizing that we would then destroy them through our hacking ability? That's what's going on. And so the American public is just churning this issue of the Russians hacking, which is ridiculous, hacking our election. And so we have been spending billions of dollars to destabilize the internal government of Russia. We've been doing that for quite a number of years, and we did it successfully.
What's going on, in your opinion, with, you know, what's going on with, you know, I mean, was Trump put into office? Was the American, I mean, it's hard to know what's really going on. I mean, if the American secret underground is manipulating other parts of the world, are they manipulating our own elections as well? That's what I'm asking.
Of course. Of course they try to. I don't know how successful they would be. But no question. You know, we do this around the world, going back to destabilizing the government of Iran in 53, to Chile with Kissinger et al.
And Allende, of course.
That's Chile. And of course, what we've been doing in the government of the Caribbean and South America, I mean, we're the worst of all in this regard. And so, what we do is we stand up there with our pundits on late night news and evening news and listen to them excoriate against Iran and against Russia et al. When what we've done is a lot worse.
Why is it so hard for somebody to come forward and say, this is what we've been doing, let's clean the slates and start from an honest beginning here?
Well,
we've
had that with Snowden. That's exactly what he did. We've had that with WikiLeaks and Assange, and we had that with Manning. And so they pay a price for that. That we have a whole body of whistleblowers. Wait a second. We have a whole body of whistleblowers that have been telling us what's been going on for quite a number of years. And they get punished. Their careers, their lives are turned upside down. And this is the price you pay for telling the truth about what's going on. And so you wonder why,
more people don't join them. You wonder why more people don't come forward, right? Yeah.
Of course, because there's so much such punishment meted out against those that do.
But why can't we have a leader, a politician, someone to come forward and tell the truth, not just about UFOs, but about the internal politics? I mean, Obama looked like the kind of guy that would, but it didn't seem like he did he?
He was terrible. He was terrible. He campaigned on transparency and did just the opposite when he got to office. So when you say why, well, you're looking for somebody on a white horse, you know, join the club. There's no such thing. You know, leaders, some people do the best they can from the positions that they have, myself and these others that we just talked about. But you want somebody to get out there and be the leader and change it all. That's not the way the world works. The only answer book.
I know. Of course, you're right. It doesn't. But were you aware of John Podesta's desire to get the UFO question out there when he was feeding Hillary Clinton certain lines and interviews? Were you aware of that?
No, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, John Podesta seemed to have had an agenda of bringing out the UFO question and asked journalists to ask Hillary Clinton these questions.
Good, more power to him, and I applaud him for that.
But I was hoping she would come forward and release the information. Do you think she would have, or did you not trust her either?
I didn't trust her as far as I could throw her.
Really? Really? Well, so here we are in the situation. 50 years or more in the dark about the UFO question? Does it? And of course, there'll be about three or four people gathering in Joshua Tree. That's a grassroots movement, and we're hoping it will gain momentum. I'm also part of an organization called the Disclosure Advocates, activists. But what's our chances of bringing this to the public through official or unofficial means?
First off, our chances are good. What we've got to do is come to the realization that we have to empower the people to be able to make laws. Lawmaking is the central power of government. So if the people can make laws at all levels of government, they can turn around and strip the shroud of secrecy from areas of government and share that information directly with the rest of the people. Now, the people, if they can make laws to do that, then that's the direction that we need to go in. Now, the difficulty of setting up a passing legislation to empower the people to become lawmakers is very, very difficult. The Congress is not going to empower the people. The elites that control our society are going to fight every step of the way. So what we have to do is to find a way to go around the government in a national election, asking people if they want to be empowered so that they can make laws. And if a sufficient number of people agree in the affirmative, then it becomes the law of the land. That's exactly how our government was created in 1787-88. Exactly how our government was created.
What would that look like, going around the government in a national election? How do you see that happening?
Well, first off, it would take a lot of money. And so, here there's a person, Zuckerberg. He's got more money than sin. He could fund this operation. In fact, he's groping around with a way to have an impact on public policy. But what he's done is he's not made any what I would call an intelligent move. He's hired the former campaign manager of Obama. Then he's hired the former campaign manager of Bush. And assuming that these people have the contacts to bring about changes in government. Well, that's a ridiculous approach. It's not going to work. These people, they're good at campaigns, but they're not good as lobbyists. That's why you hire lobbyists. And so he's hired these two people essentially as lobbyists. And he's not going to be any more successful than anybody else doing this. What he needs to realize is that he has to fund a national election, which he could do as part of chump change, fund a national election that would cost as much as a presidential election, that would permit the people to vote to empower themselves. So it's not asking the leaders to empower the people, it's asking the people to empower themselves. And that's how we formed our government.
Is this the topic of your lecture at Contact, the new paradigm of human governance? Is this what you're going to be talking about?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm going to be covering in detail.
So you're saying it's possible for someone with a lot of money to fund a national election that wouldn't be a presidential election or a political election. Is that in the Constitution to do that?
Of course it's in the Constitution to do that. The Constitution, okay, with Article 7, said that when the conventions of nine states ratified the amendment to the Constitution creating the new government, that when they voted in the affirmative, it became the government of those nine states. Well, that's exactly what we're saying. If a number of people voted for the National Citizens Initiative, it becomes the law of the land, because that's what the people want. We have the technology to ask the people.
So is this a movement you're spearheading, or is this just a philosophical?
I've been spearheading this effort for the last 20 years. And I've not been successful in getting anybody with any substantial financial resources to undertake the task of conducting this national election, permitting the people to make a decision to vote to empower themselves. Now, a person like like Zuckerberg could do that. Several other people could do it. I've tried to repeatedly go after wealthy, progressive people without success, without success.
Well, we just had, you know, probably the largest U.S. and world demonstration, probably, you know, 5 million, 8 million people marching around the city on January 21st. That seems like a very ripe public to start to have this momentum behind this new governance.
That's correct. That's correct. But you got to keep in mind that these protests that you're seeing around the world are funded by people of substance. You know, people just can't walk out on the street with well-made signs and think they're going to carry the day. So, but the problem with that approach is it's going to fail. There's no question about it. When I see protests, all I see is the affirmation that democracy is a failure. Because if it were not a failure, the people would be able to enact things and they wouldn't have to protest. You protest because you can't do anything else. And that's what a lot of progressives think is going to change things during the Obama years in your dreams. Protest is nothing but an admission that democracy has failed.
Well, what did you think of Bernie Sanders? Was he someone you supported?
I thought he was great. I supported Bernie Sanders. I contributed to Bernie Sanders. But he was dead wrong on one thing. He had this whole agenda of what to do, but he never had a plan to bring it about. Now, the only way you can bring it about is to get the Congress to vote for it. Well, the Congress is not going to vote for Bernie Sanders' agenda, but the American people would vote for that. But you got to empower the people to be able to make laws. And they would have enacted here. We've been ripping for the last 10 years, ripping our guts out over health care. And we're going to continue to do it for another decade. When all we got to do is look at Canada, look at other countries around the world, and realize that a single payer system is the fairest system and the most just system. But that's not what the insurance industry, that's not what Wall Street wants. And so, therefore, we're going to be ripping ourselves apart on an issue. And so when Bernie Sanders was for single-payer health care, as I am for single-payer health care, how's it going to come about? It's got to pass through Congress. And all you got to do is look at what the Congress is doing right now, and it's the most ridiculous exercise of lawmaking that I've ever seen.
So, yeah, single-payer health care, they mean that it's basically the government covers our health care, right? I mean, is that what single-payer actually means?
Stop. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 87, and I've got Medicare. I happen to have VA because of my service, but Medicare. Now, what we could do is we could have Medicare for everybody, and that would be single-payer. And we have good experience with Medicare, and we have a lot of experience. And all we could do is just pass a simple law transferring the responsibility for the health of the American people to Medicare. End of story.
Well, of course. I mean, health care is a human right. It's not something the rich should have to pay for. Everyone deserves health care. It doesn't make sense. I mean, so
no
I
questions.
Agree.
Okay, good.
Okay,
good.
Of course. No one should be making money over other people's suffering. I think that's it's a sin. It's a crime against humanity, basically, to not have that. You know. So as far as this new paradigm of human governance, is it just you putting this forth, or who's part of your team that is putting out these ideas?
Well, I've had over the last 25 years quite a number of people helping to bring about the legislation and to keep improving the legislation to what we have now. And many people have died because of their age. And so here I'm 87. I've got this program that's ready to go right off the shelf that a person like Zuckerberg could grab and change the nature of human governance. But how do you get his attention on this? That's an interesting conundrum.
Well, so you the money you're hoping to raise, the money would be what? To help publicize a national campaign? Is that what all the money is needed for?
Publicize a national campaign and do a national campaign. You'd have to have organizations in every congressional district of the United States. This would take over a year to do, but it's very doable if somebody wants to put up the money. I don't have the energy at my point in life to turn around and try to what I've been doing in the past, to raise the money piecemeal. No, what I can do is I could help put in front of somebody the entire process, which has been developed over a decade or two decades, and act as advisor. That's all I can do. And so when I go to the convocation in the desert, it's to try to share my knowledge, and maybe somebody will pick it up, and it would get to somebody like Zuckerberg or whoever. Much more than that is limited.
No, and I appreciate your intelligence, and it seems like the only way things are going to change is if we do take the power back from the politicians. So we really do not even more.
Wait a second. First off, let me dispute you.
The affairs
don't take back anything.
Yeah,
we never got it. When our country was formed in Philadelphia. Okay. They consciously left the people out of the picture so that they would not jettison slavery. That's the whole thing that went on. And so the American people got screwed in the structure of our government to protect slavery, and we've been living with that problem ever since.
So now here we are, and this is one solution you're putting forward. Are there books out there that can help guide people in structuring this new paradigm of governance? I mean, is there some kind of plan?
All they got to do is go to my website, MikeGravel.com or ncid.us. And if you want a book that has three chapters about it plus the text, there's a book called Citizen Power. You can get it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. When you were in Congress, did you meet anyone else who felt
The answer to that is no. I have never been able to entice or secure the support of an elected official. And there's a reason for that. Is because when you get elected, you raise the money from the special interest to get elected. After you're elected, you think that you're the smart ones and that you're smarter than the people, and so you don't defer to the people. When in point of fact, the collective of the American people is much more knowledgeable and has more wisdom than the leaders who control our society today. I have unreserved faith in the people. I have no faith in Wall Street and the military-industrial complex.
Do you think it's even worse now with someone like Donald Trump?
Oh, no, I don't. It's confusing. There are going to be positive opportunities, and there's going to be a lot of negative opportunities. But, no, I don't think that it's a plus or a minus. I do know that Hillary was hell-bent on going to war with Russia.
Yeah, it seemed that way.
And so I think we can be very grateful that we can be grateful that she didn't get elected. But it says something about...
Now, going back to the UFO... Yeah. What's something about... Go ahead, sorry.
Well, it says something about our political system. When we get two flawed candidates, that's the only choice we have for president. Says something about the dereliction of our political system.
So this new approach to governance would overhaul the whole thing then? I don't quite see.
You're right. It would overhaul everything because it would put the people in charge through a process that is very deliberative. We're not just throwing out this power and people going to charge around and do things. No, the people are going to have to act the way legislators have to act because they've got procedures within the legislative body. And so what I've done with the National Citizens Initiative, I've created a whole body of procedures that will permit people to deliberately enact laws and enact them independent of representative government.
And of course, we have the technology. Do you see it relying on technology? And
Alan, that's the obvious. We have the technology to do all of this and then some.
So we have the technology to do away with representative government and have people be the government.
Stop a minute. I'm not advocating doing away with representative government.
Okay.
What I'm advocating is empowering. Okay. What I'm advocating is empowering the people to make laws in every government jurisdiction of the United States. Now, the representative government will similarly be able to make laws in every jurisdiction where they have the power, the legislative power. So you would have the people making laws and the government continuing to make laws through their representation. And I think what you'll find is that the government will defer to the people in the final analysis. Because the people, the minute they become empowered, become the senior partners in this association of the people and their elected officials.
But if we have people making the laws, do we really need representatives of the people in that case? That's what I'm asking.
Yes, we do. Because what you're doing is you're talking about setting up something that has no precedent and we have no experience. And so it would be the better part of valor to recognize that there are beneficial facets of representative government and that we need not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so, but what we have to recognize, because essentially what the people are doing with the National Citizens Initiative, they're using the same legislative procedures that exist in the Congress. That's what I've done. I copied the procedures of lawmaking in representative government and put them into a format that can be done directly by the people.
I think it's the most exciting thing I've heard in a long time, this idea. I'm very happy that you're coming forward, or I know you've been working on it for a long time, but I think it's time. I think we're due for something like this, and people are tired of the government they've had, so it might be the time for this to happen.
I think so, too. But I've been thinking that way for the last 30 years.
Yeah, but it's much worse than it's ever been. Don't you think so?
I agree. No, it is. It is. The people are angry. And when they get angry enough, they'll look to alternatives. And I have an alternative. It's the only alternative that I know. It truly is. And I say this with humility. There's only two venues for change. One is the government, wherein exists the problem, and the other is the people. But the people do not have procedures to implement their will, and that empowerment is the ability to make laws. We are a nation of laws, not of individuals, of laws. And so if you're going to take control of human governance, you have to take control of a lawmaking process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how does the UFO question fit into this whole thing?
It fits in real good because here, all this time, the government has been shrouded the whole issue in secrecy. Once the people have the ability to make laws, they'll rip that shroud aside and they will become informed of necessity as to what's been going on in the whole UFO history.
Wow. And I think that will change everything, because if they exist, these UFOs, which of course I think they do, they're not getting here by filling up their gas tank. And I think that's the biggest bar that we have to overcome is the corporate greed that's stopping us from other forms of energy. And they're of course, in bed with the politicians, and that's what that's our biggest problem.
They're not in bed with the politicians. They own the politicians. They bought them lock, stock, and barrel. And that's the president, and that's the Congress.
So how do we defeat the corporate structures that run the government? How do we?
Well, that's what I'll be talking about at the conference at the end of May. And how you do it with you change the paradigm of human governance. And that paradigm change is to empower people to make laws. That's the paradigm change.
Right. No, I think it's very exciting times. Imagine if if this was to really happen, let's say you got someone with a lot of money, whatever it costs, a couple of $100 million or $1 billion to do this. And this went through as a national education. You'd say it would take about a year or two to make it.
No, I think you could do this in a year's time. You could do this in a year's time. You just got to be able to set up political organizations in every congressional district so that you can get a majority of the people to vote for this. The people have to vote for this. If they don't vote for this, it's not going to happen.
So what exactly you're saying? They're voting for the ability to make their own laws. Is that what they're voting for?
That's the effect. They're voting for the National Citizens Initiative, which is a constitutional amendment and a Legislative Procedures Act. It's a bundle of two laws. And once that's enacted by the majority of the American people, voting citizens, then it becomes the law of the land.
And then what's the next step do you see following that after it's the law of the land?
Well, the Congress would appropriate the money to fund the electoral trust, and the trust would begin to secure all Americans registered for life to vote, not have to worry about any your various districts, and then they would turn around and set up the procedures and educate the people in various parts of the country how to implement those procedures to make laws. And then the Electoral Trust would then receive initiatives like single payer and others to be placed before the people. And then they would go through a process. And at the end of the process, they would be voted on over a 7-day period, 24 hours a day. And you could vote for these whether you're on vacation or your home or what have you. And you can vote using the most advanced technology on these initiatives. They would be limited to 52, one per week at the federal level, one per week at the state level, one per week at the county level, one per week. So it means that the most that a person could be voting on would be 52 times a year over a week's period at the most convenient operation. And they could vote yes or no on these initiatives or not vote at all. There's no requirement that they have to vote.
They could vote through email or even like that, you're saying, right?
You'd set up a process that would be technologically sound. And here you could be on your vacation in southern France. And during the week that you're there, there's things you want to vote on. So you just get into the system and vote what you want to vote, and that's it. No big deal.
So this, I see this as a real revolution. I mean, this is an amazing advancement in human.
Here, the title of my speech is Changing the Paradigm of Human Governance. So it does exactly that. It changes the paradigm of human governance.
Well, it's a revolutionary change. This is like, what democracy, it's the next phase of democracy, it seems like.
It is democracy. In fact, we don't have democracy right now. All we have is representative government. We don't have democracy. Mm-hmm. Now, once this is in place, then we will have democracy.
Well, I really appreciate your efforts and your intelligence and at least putting out the vision. You never talked to Bernie Sanders about this kind of idea?
No, I haven't. I contributed to him. I wrote him letters, and he never acknowledged a word.
Oh. Well, sorry to hear that. All right, well, we'll
No,
just keep putting
that's
it out.
par for the course. I understand how the system works, and that's par for the course.
You understand how it worked, but you were never caught up in the system, even though you were a senator, huh?
Well, I was caught up enough to understand how it works.
Right. Well, thank you for your time, Senator. I appreciate
Good,
your
and
efforts, and
I
I
look
look
forward
forward to
to being
seeing you
here.
at Contact in the Desert. What's the best
Yes, very much.
website for you?
Well, the website is MikeGravel.com
Okay.
or
And
NCID.us. Both I have two.
okay. And do you, and do you have articles written about this new paradigm of human governance
Oh,
anywhere on
yeah.
those?
That's what my website is loaded with.
Okay, great.
And
Great,
there's
great.
a book. There's a book out there called Citizen Power that you can buy from Amazon, and it has chapter 2 has got the National Initiative, and chapter 12, Who Stole the American Dream? Of course, it was the founders of the country, the framers of the Constitution. That's who stole the American Dream, and so it has all, and then it has a text of the National Initiative and the constitutional amendment. So that's all there in the book. And the book is dated, but I keep everything updated on my website.
Let me just ask you one question. If UFOs were to become public knowledge, how do you think that would fundamentally change us, change our country, us, change the planet?
I think it would diminish the arrogance that human beings have towards nature and towards our environment. The arrogance of human beings is really knows no bounds. But then to wake up one day and realize that we're not the only sentient beings in the cosmos, that would be very humbling and would be, in my mind, very beneficial to society.
I agree. Thank you. Thank you for your time. I look forward to seeing you at Contact in the Desert.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Tell them to go ahead and send me the airline tickets and the hotel reservations so we can get going. Okay?
I will. I'm going to talk to him this week. Thanks for being a guest and see you there. And I'm willing to do what I can to make this new paradigm of human governance possible.
Well,
So,
now, excuse me, find out how we would get to Zuckerberg. He has an open mind to this. The problem is that how do you get to him? You know, I've tried to go there, and you've got all kinds of screening. They'll say they'll contact you. Here, most of the people can't begin to understand what I'm talking about. It's a chance that if I could talk to Zuckerberg and his wife, they might understand what I'm talking about. But as far as most other people, they don't understand it.
Well, if you could, this would be a real Facebook revolution. All
Of course,
right.
it would. It would
I don't know.
benefit him economically.
Yeah, well, it would benefit all of us. All right, let me
Yes.
see who I know who could talk to Zuckerberg. I mean, I don't have any direct contact myself, but maybe you should do more programs on the radio. I'll set you up with some other interviews if you want, and we could put the word
No,
out
I'm
there
not
because I
rushing.
think.
Here, I've only got so much energy.
Okay.
So you don't have to rush to get me on a bunch of programs. If we could get
Okay.
a way to be able to sit down for a half hour with his wife and Mark, I think I could persuade them. Because when he's looking for the big deal, he's looking for the big change. This is it. This is the biggest
All
deal of all in human history.
right. That would be amazing. Okay. Let me see what I
Okay.
can do. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'll see you then. If I can do something great, or I might know somebody who has a connection in there. So
Okay,
thank you
see you
too,
soon.
Senator.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you. I've been talking to former Senator of Alaska, Mike Gravel. He's going to be a featured speaker at the upcoming Contact in the Desert. That is May 19th to 21st, 2017, in Joshua Tree, California. You can go to contactinthedesert.com. He'll be talking about that idea he's just put forward here, a new paradigm, human governance. And it's, as he was saying, this could be a huge revolution, a huge upgrade of in human history. So, yeah, if you have any questions or you want to get in touch with me or have connections to people who are interested in funding these kind of ideas, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I'll pass it on to Senator Gravel. You can also go to his website, SenatorSenMikeGravel.com. Thank you for listening. I appreciate any feedback, any ideas, any suggestions. Contact in the Desert is going to be an amazing conference of the top, I'd say, researchers in the UFO field. There'll also be a lot about ancient civilizations and the crossover between ETs, ancient civilizations. Giorgio Tsokalos from Ancient Aliens will be there, but so will Graham Hancock and Robert Schock and Michael Tellinger. And also this year, Jacques Vallée, Whitley Strieber, Linda Moulton Howe. These are some of the real all-stars. The niece of Betty Hill will be there. And it's going to be an amazing 3 or 4 days in the desert. Hope to see you there. Thanks for listening. You can also reach me at newrealities.com and at my YouTube station, my YouTube channel, youtube.com/newrealities. Thanks for listening. Good night.